My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. Just me, Rahul, and Ronald today. And it's my turn to pick because we're doing the Summer of Lawrence. And I have selected the 2023 film, The Pope's Exorcist. I'm going to keep trying that Italian accent. Probably not going to get it, honestly.
That was, but... I mean, you did three words and it was already Transylvanian.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's not looking great so far.
Yeah. And so it was I was picking, and I picked this because in a previous episode, I'd recommended this movie and Ronald expressed skepticism. And then Brandon pointed out that I could make Ronald watch it. And if he liked it, I owned him because he would have liked a movie he didn't think he'd like it. I said he would like. And if he didn't like it, I would have owned him because I made him watch a movie he didn't like. So it was awesome. I had this whole trap set up. And then, spoiler alert, we watched it, and Ronald thought it was pretty mediocre, neither good nor bad, really. And I had a kind of weird, like, crisis, almost existential, about, like, what does it mean to like a movie? Why do I like the movies I like? What does it mean to be Lawrence? So I think I got owned, and, like, the deepest owns, I did it to myself.
You got the Uno reverse card on you somehow. Yep.
So anyways, I guess let's go around and would you recommend this movie? Ronald, you're the triumph here. What do you got to say?
I would not recommend this movie. So this isn't like a bad movie. And if you're just like, this is a perfectly pleasant, this is way better than a lot of movies we've watched on here. But it's also like a lot more boring to me. And Lawrence and I have kind of talked about this in kind of long fashion. It does not take itself too seriously, and that can be fun. In this movie, I thought it was really weird because it's a horror, or it's paced like a horror movie, even though it's not scary in any way. I think it just kind of extends it out, and it made it kind of flat. It just fell flat for me. Now, if you have this on in the background, it's like a perfectly acceptable thing. You'll see a couple of scenes that are pretty funny, and I think that that's a really good way of watching this, but I wouldn't sit down to watch this one personally. That's just my recommendation.
And Rahul, what did you think?
My recommendation differs from Ronald because I never watch horror and I hate horror. And I didn't think this was funny at all. But to make a long story short, I don't recommend it. Although it was enjoyable, even though I hate horror, and I thought some parts were kind of scary, but maybe that's just, well, that's definitely just me. And the reason is, it sort of just ends on a flat note. It ends on nothing.
We're going to talk about the ending.
Annoyed me.
I do not agree that it ends on nothing. It ends on something kind of incredible to me.
Okay, all right.
We'll talk about it, I guess.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in high points and low points.
Yeah. And as for me, so, okay, first of all, I realize that all a movie has to do to make me like it really is it can't bore me and it can't piss me off. And if a movie does those two things, it's a 3-star movie in my book. And then, you know, if it like is funny or something, it'll knock it up a bit. So for me, this is a 3.5 to 4-star movie because it's got a lot of, it wasn't boring to me. Nothing in it really pissed me off. And a lot of extremely goofy shit happens in it. And then the other thing is I watch a lot of like kind of horror movies of about this budget level made in America. And this is astonishingly good for one of those because it doesn't have any of those like long scenes where it's just a character kind of wandering around a house. And then at the very end, something spooky happens, but it's still like minutes of just a character kind of existing in a space without like any, like anything happening. And because like it actually like it, so it's pretty it's paced like Ronald says it's slack, but the individual scenes like are full of incident and not just, you know, walk around, see something spooky, fade, you know, jump cut.
I agree with that.
A thing I hate in horror, like you can do it well. There are movies that do it well, but that is like the hardest thing I think to do well.
So I mean, it has to be like genuinely scary for that to work.
Yeah. So
very few movies are able to do that.
I've seen two movies that are like basically this, but worse, The Nun and Pray for the Devil. So when I watch this, I'm like, oh my God, it actually has energy and verve and shit. Although that's not really an argument for this movie so much as it is an argument against them. So I don't know. I guess I like it because a bunch of goofy, weird shit happens. And Russell Crowe has an accent that's very funny to me. and it's light on its feet, and most of the jokes landed for me. But Christ, I don't know. I'm kind of wondering why I'm so enthusiastic about it in the cold light of day. I still am enthusiastic about it, but I struggle to explain why.
You're just an enthusiastic guy.
Here's my theory on what happened with this movie. I think you liked it all right when you first saw it, and I was very negative when you were talking about it, and that just kind of forced you to double down. And that's been going for months. And
yeah,
I think this
does conveniently fit into the Ronald-centric theory of the universe. So
God damn
I'm
going to
agree.
When he first watched it, I mean, it does make me sound like a total egotist, which, you know, not wrong. But when he first watched it, he texted the group about it a bunch, and I kept being like, wow, that sounds really stupid.
And I kept listing, things that happened in it that I thought were kind of amazing, like the Pope projectile vomiting blood on a guy, or Russell Crowe's Vespa being key to solving the puzzle.
Which, mostly I was just messing with Lawrence, being like, which part is the recommendation, LOL, stuff like that. And so then I think Lawrence got really annoyed and then kept doubling down on recommending this to me until he forced me to watch it. And then when I was like, yeah, it was all right, he was like, had a crisis of conscience or something. I don't even know what happened.
Wow, yeah. Lawrence, is this true, Lawrence?
I can't speak to the first part, but I was legitimately out walking my dog at the lovely Albuquerque Bosque this morning being like, why do I like anything?
Why does this happen so much?
Why do I have so many crises of conscience while I'm not walking my dog? I don't know.
So many existential crises deriving from terrible movies.
What's the podcast that we're on right now?
200.
We've been doing this for years now. I think it's a totally normal question at some point to be like, actually,
why do I like these movies?
Yeah.
Wait, why am I me? Who am I?
And sometimes, you know, sometimes all it takes is watching a movie in the right frame of mind to like it or dislike it. So, you know, I will say I was primed slightly to dislike this movie going in because I feel like Lawrence and I were butting heads. And I don't know how that personally affected me. It might have dragged me a little bit down. I tried to think of it and enjoy the parts that I would enjoy anyways, but you know, just full disclosure, I think that probably Lawrence went into this viewing with slightly primed for positive, and maybe I was slightly primed for negative. I don't know.
I mean, I still like this movie, but I do think one of the things that happened is that in the months since I've been I watched this movie, I mostly remember the parts of it that are really funny and weird, which there are a fair amount of, and cut over the parts where it's just a pretty standard Exorcist ripoff, albeit an enthusiastic one. So, I don't know. I built it up a little more in my head, but I still do like this movie.
Yeah.
Even if I struggle to explain why, aside from just listing insane things that happen in it.
I think you feel a kinship with Asmodeus. Would be my guess.
We'll talk about it, man. It's so embarrassing to me that they had to go on this quest to discover that the demon's name was Asmodeus, which would be my third fucking guess. It's like, okay, are you Satan? No. Lucifer? No. Asmodeus? Okay, we're done.
if you just organize the demons alphabetically, Asmodeus is near the top. Come on, guys. It's right there. It's number three.
I mean, we find out that there's only 600 devils. You could just stand there and start listing them off, dude.
Why does he even care?
Because he's Catholic. Oh, wait, you mean the demon?
Right. Why was he even hiding his name?
I think it's a magic thing. It's got to be a magic thing.
You know the demon's name. You have magic over him.
Yeah,
Sorry.
I don't know. It didn't seem to actually affect it that much.
Yeah, they learn his name, but then they go into exorcise it, and then it kind of just laughs at them.
Yeah.
Didn't seem to work. Exactly. Apparently what you needed to do was let the demon inside you and then make the demon leave you, and then it comes back as two hot chicks, and then you touch them with magic cords and they explode. That's how you defeated this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they didn't do that from the beginning.
Just slap a magic... Well, I guess they didn't want the kid to explode.
Well, let's do the summary.
Let's do the summary, yeah.
And you know what, okay. Lawrence? I bow this out on this one if you want to go ahead and just do it, because you've seen the movie twice.
Yeah. Okay, Raul, do you want to roll or should I just go?
Let's roll, baby.
Fair enough. Raul's in an especially squirrely mood, so I am kind of curious what he would do with this if he got
okay,
it.
Okay, okay. Well, then put me in the roll, too, then.
Okay.
If we're going to roll anyways.
Oh, fuck, it's me after all of that. I rolled a one, and I always go me, one, two, you, three, four.
Oh, one. Shit. One.
All right, looks like we crit failed on this one, boys.
Okay, hit me up with 2 minutes. Just give me a little bit of breathing room.
Okie dokie. You ready?
Yep.
Yep, 3, 2, 1, go.
So we open in rural Italy where Russell Crowe is riding around on a Vespa in a silly hat, and he's being summoned to exercise a boy. And so he has a girl like pray in the and then goes upstairs and he just owns the demon with facts and logic and says like, hey, you're a demon. Tell me my name. Tell me what hell's like. Do anything that proves that you're a demon. And the demon just sort of shouts at him. And so then he prays a bunch, then he has them bring in a pig. He taunts the tricks the demon into jumping in the pig and then has them shoot the pig. Then he gets called back to Rome. And he gets called before council and they're like, hey, you performed an unsanctioned exorcism. And he's like, that wasn't an exorcism. That dude wasn't possessed. I was just doing a primitive psychology on him. And they're like, okay, but we still really don't like that you're an exorcist and the Inquisition's on your ass. And he's like, yeah, but I'm the Pope's exorcist. So what the fuck are you going to do about it, idiot? This is the Catholic Church. But apparently his job is somehow still in peril, even though the Pope doesn't want him to be. So then this American woman with a hot daughter and a really creepy son gets called to an abbey that her husband somehow owned, and he died in a car crash in front of their son, so their son's now mute. They're trying to renovate it and sell it. The kid goes down to the basement and gets possessed and starts shouting in the voice of Ralph Ineson, which rules for a priest, so they call a priest, but then he's like, wrong priest. So then the Pope's exorcist gets dispatched, and the Pope's like, I got a bad feeling about this one. But Father Marth, who is the Pope's exorcist, is just like, fuck you, and goes there anyways. They try to banish the demon. It turns out this demon's real, not like the last one, but it doesn't really work. So then they do some investigation and discover that this demon possessed the head exorcist of the Vatican back in like the 13th, 14th century and started the Spanish Inquisition and is trying to do it again. And so he and the priest like investigate a bunch, the local priest investigate a bunch more, find the demon's name. It doesn't really work, but they still like, eventually the demon's like about to kill two kids and Russell Crowe does the Father Cares and says, take me, not them. And then Russell Crowe tries to hang himself, but then the demon's like, and does some psychic power shit to like throw him off to the side. So then he goes down to the basement where there's this super cool portal to hell that leaks sulfur and sits on this cool throne and looks super cool while holding a super cool staff. But then the village priest comes down and he's like, hey dude, stop being possessed. And Russell Crowe's like, okay. So the demon comes out of him, two hot chicks emerge from the portal to hell. One of them totally naked, and although covered in blood, so you don't see anything. Although you did see her naked previously, so that's pretty good. And they fight. Russell Crowe and the priest do that thing where two cops will be standing next to each other and both firing their guns, but instead they're both holding out crosses and praying. And that has the effect of, hurts the demons a little bit. And then they put a magic coin on the woman's head and she explodes. And then they put a magic coin on the other one and she turns to dust. Meanwhile, while all this was happening, the Pope got super sick because he had a psychic link to Father Karras or Jedi powers or something. And he vomited blood on a dude, which was very amusing. But then Father Gabriel Amorth gets called back to the Vatican. And he found this scroll that shows where there's 599 other demons he needs to defeat. And he gets invited to essentially join the Vatican version of S.H.I.E.L.D., where an authoritative black man invites him down into a spotless underground lab layer with all this advanced technology, except it's biblical shit down there. And they form a team to go hunt down the rest of the demons. And the sequel has already been confirmed.
They're going to make another one?
Oh, yeah. This made money and everyone liked it. I mean, wow. No, but yeah.
Do you think that this confirms the existence of the CCU, the Christ Cinematic Universe?
They're like, every movie's technically in our thing because Jesus is Lord, bitch. I've been saying bitch a lot tonight. I apologize.
You don't have to apologize to us.
I apologize to Jesus, though, because, you know, he is Lord.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You probably should.
We're also part of the Christ Cinematic Universe. Yeah. So anyways, I guess let's get into some high points, which I'm going to start with just Russell Crowe is pretty incredible in this. I had previously said that he had a Mangia accent. It's actually a pretty creditable, I think, realistic Italian. I think Russell Crowe has just started trying to become Italian because he's like the ambassador to Italy in some capacity now. And yeah. And apparently he just speaks Italian pretty good. And also his current body kind of suggests that he's really taken to that pasta.
I mean, you can't blame him. Actually, I've never been to Italy, but I want to.
Everything I hear about it is that their food is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Gotta go to Italy. Pasta.
But anyways, he's like funny and earthy and not at all like the real Father Amorth, who was by all accounts a real weirdo who said that Harry Potter could like lead to you getting possessed by the devil. And just a great performance of him like being twinkly but also steely and irradiating Russell Crowe charisma.
I agree. No, yeah. Russell Crowe is fucking fantastic. And I thought his accent, and I like accents, and I thought he did an amazing job, his accent. I mean, you could tell that his Italian wasn't like totally perfect, but that's fine. Like, I don't give a shit. But his Italian accent was very solid.
And I mean, I think even him speaking Italian, I don't speak it, but it seemed pretty close just to an American, at least, you know?
Yeah. No, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Russell Crowe's easily the high point of the movie, acting wise. And just honestly, just he's the source of all the fun in this movie. Doesn't work without him. And basically, all the scenes where he's not in it are real snorefests. So.
Yeah, the couple of scenes where it's just the kid shouting in Ralph Ineson's voice are kind of, without Russell Crowe, are kind of fun. And also, obviously, the Pope vomiting blood on that one guy, which I keep bringing up, but is totally unrelated to everything that else that happens in the movie, but very funny.
They could have taken the Pope out of this movie, and it wouldn't have affected the plot at all, except that they wouldn't have had the blood puke scene.
Ooh, which so was, they definitely needed it then.
Yeah, right. They had to have that scene in there.
This is also a movie where the Pope has magic powers and will periodically sense when Russell Crowe is in trouble, like Jedi do.
I mean, that's just real.
Yeah. The Pope has a mind link with his exorcist.
Okay, but going back to a point that you said earlier, Ralph Ineson as the kid's voice or whatever.
Yeah.
Another high point in this. And also just the makeup on the kid at some point was like pretty good. It's not the exorcist level, but it wasn't CGI, and I thought it looked pretty good. I didn't think really anything in this movie was scary, but it did look like it did make him look really weird, and I don't know. He looked demonic enough to me.
And he also seems to just be having an absolute fucking ball doing this stuff. Like him and Ralph Ineson both together, like have this weird combined performance where they're just like, "I'm a demon, and I fucking love being a demon so much, dude."
Yeah. Yeah, the kid was pretty good for considering, you know, I don't know, he's like a 12-year-old kid or something.
I mean,
looks like it.
I don't want to be a jerk, but he also just naturally seemed pretty creepy, which is an asset in this. Although I can't tell how much of that was makeup, you know.
Yeah, right. And like lighting and, but you're right. I mean, he does have that kind of quality.
Like even before he's possessed, I'm like, I think that kid's going to grow up to like murder some prostitutes, you know.
Let's hire him.
Yeah. Wait, no, I don't approve of prostitute murder. I don't know why Ronald said that.
I didn't mean like hire him for that. Hire him for the movie.
Oh, fair enough. The movie we're making about a prostitute murderer.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, anyway. I have a high point. The decision to put Russell Crowe on a little scooter and have him scoot around.
Riding a Vespa around?
I like that.
At one point, he appears to ride his Vespa from Rome all the way to, I guess, the coast of Spain.
How long of a ride is that?
I mean, dude, probably...
What's the top speed on those things?
Let's find out.
I mean, I can't imagine it's like much more than like 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, if you get a Primavera, which I assume he did, it could go up to 56.5 miles per hour, which cannot possibly
that's probably
sick.
Redlining it, though.
The Vespa 300 has a top speed of 74.5 miles per hour, and also none of these appear to have seatbelts.
Okay, I also... Yeah, can you have a seatbelt on a motorcycle?
No, you cannot.
Speaking of the Vespa and high points, there's a point where there's like something heavy on something he's trying to look under, and he hooks a rope up to the Vespa and hauls it off using his stupid little Vespa. I'm like, dude, I don't think that would work any better than just lifting it.
Especially, I mean, Russell Crowe, very strong man.
It's also on dirt. Like, I can't imagine that thing can get much purchase.
No, I don't know. It was funny, though.
It was very funny. It was really funny that he was like, oh, yeah, I've done this before. Let's haul it off with the Vespa.
And then that also ends up not really mattering because he just drops a thing down to see what's down. He sees a bunch of skulls and apparently grabs one. And then he drops something to see what's down there. And then it causes a fuck-off explosion. And then he goes back to the priest. He's like, hey, let's go in another way. It's like, you could have just got it the other way, dude.
Yep. I don't know. I don't know what the point of him seeing that and realizing that there was gas down there was. I thought that was going to have a more important meaning.
Yeah, it was.
But it didn't seem to.
There was a very funny bit of comedy that happens after that, where he apparently grabbed one of the severed heads and then hit it behind his back. And then the other priest is like, what's going on? And Russell Crowe goes, let's ask my friend here, and pulls out the severed head.
He's basically blaspheming on the corpse, who he later admits is like, oh, these were innocents that were killed by the Spanish Inquisition. So he's like knowingly just fucking with a dead person's body who died horribly.
For a joke that can only possibly be funny to him, because that other priest is not going to be happy to see that fucking
He wasn't.
Corpse.
He wasn't.
Well, you got to take it easy sometimes. That was his lesson.
Yeah. I mean, I guess a body's a body. You know what? If you guys ever need to do a bit with my severed head when I'm gone, feel free.
What about before?
I give open permission.
Can we just do it right now?
Not while it's still attached.
I like that Ronald's kind of ambivalent about being bad.
I thought about it for a second.
Okay, I have a really stupid high point, but whatever. I really like the part where the Pope was given the big old book.
And it's all redacted, but it's from the Middle Ages, so they just redacted it by scratching a pen over it.
I didn't like that part, but I like
it seems like
the big old book from God knows fucking where.
Well, why would it be redacted? That's like only when like it's released to the public, and it's like, oh yeah, public people aren't allowed to see it. He's the Pope, dude. Like, he should have the original.
Maybe the other Pope. No, no, because the church was trying to cover it up.
The church isn't good at covering things up, though, Rahul.
But in this universe, are we talking about now, or, you know, are we talking about real life or the movie?
I don't think it's ever been good at covering things up, particularly.
Okay, in the movie, the church tried to cover it up. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, although even in the movie, they weren't good at it, though, because it turns out there was a letter hidden inside the book that neatly summarized what was in the book.
And it's also like redacting specific words in like an official document that shouldn't be have anything redacted is like the most surefire way of getting somebody to realize, oh yeah, somebody was trying to hide something here. Like, if you just burn the book, that would have been better, because then it's like, well, no one's going to know what happened to it.
Well, see, the problem is then your supervisors would be like, where is that book, Ronald?
You're the Pope, though, so your supervisor is God, I guess?
God's like, where's that book I asked you to write?
I mean, another twist here is that it appeared that the entire book was redacted, so at that point, yeah, you should just burn it.
I just like the idea.
Thankfully that letter was in there.
I just like the idea of, like, this ancient knowledge in a stupid big book that you have to pour through, you know? I don't know. It does it for me.
Yeah.
It was totally irrelevant.
They really should get somebody to scan that in.
It was totally irrelevant to the movie because he just had a heart attack and then, you know.
He like was like, oh god, it's a scary
demon. Yeah, I was like, what is this? What is this arc? It's so useless. Like,
god, dude, are you gonna have a heart attack every time you read about a demon? Dear god.
Yeah, I don't even know.
Plus, I mean, he's the Pope, so presumably, like, half the things he read have demons in them in some way.
You'd think
they're in the Bible.
Maybe he read Asmodeus' name, and that just freaked him out. Or, I mean, like, not freaked him out, but maybe Asmodeus. Like,
I don't think Asmodeus was named in that.
No, he wasn't? Oh, okay.
I mean, also, Asmodeus is just a pretty commonly known demon name, so if that was enough to give him a heart attack, he would be dead by now, probably.
I think all the book said was like, oh, there's something really scary at this church, and he's like, oh, no!
It said, your sins will find you out, which is kind of a basic Christian teaching, but for some reason made them really scared.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, God, which sins? I'm so fucked!
I'm so effed. God. I've done so many bad things. Yeah.
God damn it. Whoa, that sin thing was real? Yeah. Oh shit, dude.
I thought the whole Pope thing would like save me. Also, yeah. Okay. I don't know if this is a high point or a low point, but I just want to talk about it. There's an American priest in this who, for some reason, is very judgmental. And I guess he's like the head of the modern Inquisition, I think is what Warren said. And he tries to like get mad at Russell Crowe for doing an exorcism without permission or something. But it's like, wouldn't the Inquisition want extra exorcisms? Like, I don't even know what your end game is here, bro. You want to stop exorcisms?
This movie is somehow pro-exorcist and anti-Inquisition, which is a very strange line to take in a movie.
And it's also like, I can understand the motivation of a character who's like, hey, look, I'm Christian, but I don't believe in like literal demons, dude. Come on, you're just doing like fake black magic to scare people. But this guy is like so unreasonable. He's like the least reasonable guy. You would think that he seems like a super zealot too. It's like you'd think that he'd be all in on exorcisms and he'd be mad that he didn't do a real exorcism and did the fake one for the mentally ill guy or whatever.
So I thought the movie was going to do this, but it totally didn't. I thought he was going to be corrupted by a demon, and that was the reason he was turning against Russell Crowe.
I mean, he does see a demon at one point or something, because he gets super scared in that church and then runs away to Guam.
Right, so it's like he's not corrupted, so I was like, what?
I mean, what's going on there, although the movie doesn't really spell it out, is that, you remember that girl that like killed herself and Russell Crowe feels guilty about it?
Yeah.
So what was happening with her was that she was apparently having sex crimes done to her by a priest. And when Russell Crowe investigated, that's why she says that, you know, a person who looks like you comes to me every night and fucks me, right? Because he's a priest. And then Russell Crowe like kind of blew it off and she killed herself. And then in the subsequent investigation, what had happened turned out, which is kind of this movie's way of trying to deal with the whole sexual abuse scandal and show that Russell Crowe is one of the good ones. Which is also, you just shouldn't have it in the movie. But that's also why the Inquisition is coming down on him so hard, because, you know, they just really want this whole thing to be forgotten because it implicates everyone in the Catholic Church for that shit. Not a funny thing, but that is what was going on there.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. That's a fine plot point, except that it just really has nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
It shouldn't be in this movie at all. That woman should have been possessed. He should have had a moment of doubt that she wasn't possessed. Then the demon killed her, and now he feels guilty. And there shouldn't be any sex crimes in this movie at all, because it's a goofy movie where the Pope vomits blood on a guy, and Russell Crowe rides around on a silly scooter wearing a sillier hat.
Both of the main characters' backstories have to do with sex crimes, kind of.
Yeah.
One of them is only like a sex crime in the Christian church in that he had sex with a woman and didn't marry her.
While he was a priest.
He was a priest. And, you know, I thought when the movie was talking about it, it was talking about him having sex with like somebody from the people who were coming, one of the daughters. And so I was like, oh God, was she underage? This is like pretty fucked up, but She's clearly a mature adult. Oh,
yeah, she sure is.
Not in a weird way.
Well, no, but we do see her topless at one point.
Well, we do, but like, it's also very clear that she's not underage. She's like at least in her mid-20s.
Yeah, the movie doesn't want you to think that there's anything weird going on here. And probably since you are probably not a devout Catholic, you want to think that this priest is kind of beating himself up over something that's really not that bad, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's like, well, that doesn't really seem like he would be living in that much guilt. I don't know.
Yeah. The scene where Russell Crowe gives him a quickie absolution, though, is very funny. So they have to get absolved before they can go fight the demon, because the demon can smell unabsolved sins, apparently. And so Russell Crowe is like, okay, how long has it been since your last confession? And the guy's like, 6 months, I've been busy. Which, weird for a priest. But anyways, and so Russell Crowe's like, okay, well, we don't have time to do that. So just, you're a priest. Are you very sorry? And the guy says yes. And then he's like, okay, then God forgives you. And then they go in and it turns out God did not forgive them.
Or maybe he did. It's pretty unclear.
But he still felt guilty, at least.
He still felt guilty, which I guess is what counts. I don't know.
And then the other thing that Russell Crowe feels guilty about is that he survived being attacked by the Nazis, which I can see that making you feel weird, but I don't know if guilt would be the way it made you feel weird.
Exactly. No, that's a real thing, feeling guilty for not dying out there.
Yeah, survivor's guilt.
It's also been like 40 years, though.
Yeah, but still. I mean, that's a serious experience. you know, I wouldn't, I don't think it's crazy to not be able to let that go.
He does have this amazing line about it where he's like, to die in a war is heroic, to survive one, complex.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't have that.
He doesn't sound like that.
Transylvanian
accent.
Well, he has an accent, and that is an accent. So by the transitive property.
Those are true statements. You nailed the Transylvanian Count Chocula accent. I got to admit that. You got that one down.
Well, he's had a lot of practice. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to think I could at one point do accents pretty well, or not super well, but okay. But then I had a D&D character named Dr. Acula, so I was just doing that voice like weekly for several hours for like 3 years, or Christ, even more than that. So now I can't really do
it. Just is yeah. You.
It just is my accent.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, you guys want to get into low points?
Yeah, I guess let's do low points. Which I'm gonna list stupid things that I still think are kind of high points because I like stupid things in movies.
All right.
I have one that Lawrence pointed out to me that isn't really a low point, but it's very funny. It's a low point in terms of production, I think. Okay, here's what I think happened. Somebody on the production team was like, we need to find the seal of the Inquisition. And they Googled Inquisition seal, and they got the Dragon Age Inquisition symbol. And they put it in the movie, which is very funny to me because that is a fantasy video game universe. And this is like, this movie takes its like Christian lore semi-seriously. It clearly is not trying to. I don't think it's like giving a wink to the Dragon Age fans of the movie, but I don't know.
No, it cannot possibly be that because
no sense.
Yeah, unless the joke is that everyone in this movie is not actually Catholic, and they're too stupid to notice it. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. But it's very funny to me that, like, clearly somebody was like, let's get the symbol for the Inquisition, and they just, like, Googled Inquisition symbol, and they got the Dragon Age one. like, this looks good.
Yeah, this is a sharp-looking symbol. Also, the Dragon Age one, not very medieval-looking. It's, like, a very stylized, but, like, fantasy, not, like, medieval eye, and then a dagger going behind it, and rays coming off it, and it does not look like anything that a medieval person would have conceived in terms of like design. So
it also just doesn't look Christian. So it's
kind because it doesn't have a cross at all.
Yeah, it begs the question of like, why did anyone think that this was like the symbol of the Spanish Inquisition? Whatever.
Anyways, I'm gonna list one that I disapprove of because I disapprove of, you know, blasphemy and not taking the holy men seriously. So Ralph Ineson is taunting Russell Crowe at one point, and he says, "You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna fuck you." And you're like, okay, weird. But then he keeps going. So he's like, I'm going to fuck you so until you come. And then you'll sense yourself coming and you'll hate yourself for the relief you feel when I fuck you. It's like, what the fuck?
that got like into some like fetish shit, honestly. Somebody who wrote that was like kind of into that line.
He's like doing meta stuff of like, we're going to enjoy each other's bodies, but you're Catholic, so you'll feel bad about it.
Yeah, the whole demon thing is like, it seemed very focused on sex and nothing else.
Christians think is bad, I guess.
Not entirely, but like the first time the kid turns demonic, he grabs his mom's boobs. He's like, you never breastfed me, mom. And then there's all the fucking comments, and you know, I'm like, do something like more evil, man. Like,
also, I think she lets him his hand linger a little too long. Like, she looks shocked, but she does not step back.
God damn it, Lawrence.
I'm not saying it was gonna go anywhere. I'm just saying it was weird that she didn't shut that shit down quicker.
God damn, you always turn it into incest, man. Like, you always do this.
Nope. I do not approve of incest. It is not sexy. You know what? I don't even think step incest is okay. You guys all know what you're trying to do.
Oh, Lord.
Fuck.
Not this again.
Oh, and then at another point, he's like, Fuck, let me see if I can find it. This is after the coming thing. So it's really weird that they thought that this was an escalation. But after he said that thing to Russell Crowe, he turns to the other priest and goes, "How about you, panty sniffer?" And then he takes a fucking healthy sniff.
Yeah, I mean, like, it just comes back to, like, I guess the worst thing that they can think of in the Christian church is just having sex. Like, that's like the worst possible sin you can commit. Like, gay sex, unwed sex, like, just whatever. Something
that isn't actually sex, but it's kind of sex adjacent, like sniffing some panties.
Word yeah. sex.
Yeah. Thinking about it. Just like, yeah. Dear God.
That's, I mean, like, it does. The only other thing I can think of. The only other thing I can think of that it does is making fun of that one girl for having a dead father. It's just that and sex stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whole dead father thing was kind of weird because it's like, I mean, would she feel guilty about that?
I mean, it would upset her at least.
Yeah, it would upset her, but like, it seemed like most of the goal is to make them feel guilty for stuff that they did. And it's like, it's not really her fault that the dad died. And I don't think she feels that way.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Anyways, sorry, hit me, Raul.
Okay, here's a low point. The fact that they didn't tie up the clearly possessed kid immediately is, like, bizarre.
Are you blaming the family for not tying him up?
Yeah, he was clearly possessed, man. Like,
okay, so if I started acting a little weird and my skin was slightly fucked up, would you try to tie me up?
Fuck yeah, I would, dude.
He's trying to tie you up and you're not outright. Weird.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're clearly possessed. What am I supposed to do?
He's into rope play, too. So.
Yeah, and also death play, apparently, because he did say he was going to execute me.
Finally got rid of the possessed Lawrence.
Yeah. Like, why did you think he was possessed? He kept, like, talking about...
He kept doing a Transylvanian accent. I don't know.
He kept saying things like, "Please don't tie me up, and you're making me uncomfortable, and I think you should leave." Clear demon shit.
I don't know. See, I just feel like, because before the family all convened, he actually, like, psionic blasted the first priest out of the room and onto the wall. At that point, you know he's possessed, right?
But I mean, at that point, you also know he can do psionic blasts, so what the fuck is tying him up gonna do?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's just... Part of this is the demons being so inconsistent in what powers they have.
I knew we were gonna get to this.
Yeah, we gotta get into the power levels.
It's just ridiculous, man. Like,
how could this one man defeat the Prince of Hell? It makes no sense.
You know, I think they have to rely on using chanting to, like, do things.
Actually, the chanting does not appear to help very much. What appears to help
it makes the demons uncomfortable.
At one point, Russell Crowe explains how exorcism works, and basically you learn the demon's true name, and then you tell the demon to leave, and then it doesn't leave, but then you pray a bunch, and the prayer makes it uncomfortable, so it leaves. So basically you just annoy the demon into leaving.
Annoy them into submission.
So then I had the very good joke of Rahul would make an excellent exorcist.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, okay. I appreciate that.
I'm kind of with Rahul on this one, though. Like, a lot of times I don't necessarily care too much about power levels or whatever Rahul rants about.
power levels, men's rights.
Literally.
The divorce system favors women. I should have visitation against my kids if I ever had kids and got divorced. That's right.
No, but I strongly support Rahul in his power levels campaign throughout all of movies. But a lot of times I don't think it's that important personally. But in this movie, it's not necessarily about the power level thing. I think just... And this is true of basically every exorcism and almost every horror movie. Things are completely inconsistent. Like, sometimes when they pray, it doesn't do anything besides make the demon laugh. And sometimes it, like, seems to really hurt it or knock it back or let him make him float up in the air or whatever. And I, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, in a horror, not everything has to make sense. I get that. But like, I don't know. It just feels like, okay, I didn't even know why they won at the end, because there were so many times they did almost the exact same thing to the demon, and it just kind of laughed at them. So why did it hurt him that time? I don't know.
Yeah. And like, I mean, that leads neatly into the power level at the final confrontation, which is why I don't recommend this movie, is the whole movie just fizzles out here. It's like, you know, they're chanting at him, and then like the two chicks come out, and it's like the chicks kind of yell at you, but then you just put your holy coin on their forehead and that's it. That was all it took to defeat them. Like, no, one of the demons are losing. Like, they need better leadership, man. This is pathetic.
And what if he had put the coin on him from the beginning? Would that have worked?
But I mean, apparently it makes the kid explode, though, which, again, he probably didn't want that.
I guess
he
didn't want that.
I do wonder, when he was trying to kill himself, why did he just put the coin on himself, though? It's like, sayonara, demon. Exploding time.
Why didn't they put a coin on the pig instead of just blowing it away?
Because the pig wasn't possessed.
Yeah, that wasn't a real exorcism.
I mean, but it still works, right? It's still...
So you think that the coin just makes anything you touch with it?
No, that's not what I mean. It still demonstrates that you've defeated the possession.
It wasn't a real possession.
Oh, so you just needed some sort of showy
demonstration. He admits in that interview scene where like the Inquisition are trying to mess with them, he admits that that guy wasn't actually
possessed. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it wasn't was a possession. I'm just saying that wouldn't putting the coin on something that is ostensibly possessed demonstrate that it's not possessed, that you defeated it?
He did do that.
Rahul, I don't know why you're having so much trouble following this. The Russell Crowe found an intensely mentally ill man, and then he shouted at that man and was kind of shitty to him for a while, and then he shot a pig in front of that man, and it cured him.
No, okay, remember he put the coin in front of his eyes?
And when he did it with the
other guy, it, like, a demon eye showed up.
That was actually a legitimately pretty cool, like, effect shot. You know?
Yeah, that did look cool. That's a high point.
I think that might be one of the very few things in this movie that isn't just stolen directly from another movie.
Also the pig scene.
Yeah. No, I think that there is actually an Italian movie, Exorcist movie, that starts very similarly to that. Although it's been I can't remember the name because it's been so goddamn long since I've seen it.
It is very funny to be like, oh yeah, I was just helping that guy's mental health issues by executing a pig.
Look, you can only have one mental illness at a time. I gave him PTSD, so he no longer has demon possession disorder.
Really, the people that were grilling him should have been like, where'd you get the gun from? Pretty sure that's illegal in Italy.
No, they should have been like, okay, so you say you went to the house and they had a television, but then you describe all these like gas lamps. Now, are we to believe that this house somehow has electricity but no electric lighting? Your story is full of holes, Russell Crowe. I hereby strip you of your title of Pope's exorcist for lying.
That should have been the end of the movie. Yeah,
here's what they really should have been done. This is what they really should have done. They should have been like, why in Gladiator did you not have an Italian accent instead of a British accent, sir?
Oh, actually, you know what they should have done? They should have been like, how come there was no Gladiator 2 where you hunted down Jesus?
You know what? That story shows that he is actually a pretty devout Christian, because he didn't like the idea of hunting down Jesus Christ.
I'm not sure that's why he didn't like it.
Didn't like it, mate. Wasn't going to make it, mate. I like that Nick Cave of the Bad Seeds apparently has written two movie scripts, and one of them is about what you'd expect, like a dark and miserable like fable or something, and then the other one's a Gladiator sequel where he killed Jesus.
You know what, I would have watched the hell out of that.
Yes, yeah. It probably would have made more money than the original Gladiator.
No way, but it would have made it on the pod.
It would have definitely made it on the pod.
Yeah. Anyways, here's one thing that I genuinely think is too stupid even to be funny. So there's a portal to hell at the basement of this abbey for some reason. And you can tell, like, one of the priests is like, it smells like sulfur. And the Pope's like, yes, we're getting closer to hell. It's like, God damn it, dudes.
It's been like 15 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I assume that was the natural gas he was smelling. But then... I guess not.
I mean, maybe that's why there's natural gas. You know what? Remember how in Doom the plot is basically that they're using hell to like do art of, like green energy for Earth, right?
Yeah.
They should have just done that. This thing makes free natural gas. They just really bottle should. That shit up.
Yeah, hell gas. Boom.
Is that what the natural gas was supposed to represent?
Yes. It's sulfur from hell.
Sulfuric from the hell portal.
It's so funny. That's why it exploded. Stupid. Yep. Hell is very flammable.
See, they opened that, and there's like this green glow. So I thought the green glow was like, I don't know, them being taken over or something, but it just turned out the green glow was nothing. I'm not sure. I'm not sure on that one.
Yeah. You almost said I wasn't really paying attention, didn't you?
No. Do you remember, okay, so the kid, he sticks his hand in there and like pulls out like a rock, and there's like this weird hand or a spider or something back there. What was that?
No, it was just the seal was breaking. That's all it was.
Because apparently they also tried to exorcise the dude who started the Spanish Inquisition, which that part really doesn't like make sense to me. And then that didn't work, so they just kind of buried him alive next to a hell portal.
And then they put a bunch of seals around it. So like at the start, he looks through the hole and he sees like a crack forming in the seal. And he's like, what the heck?
And then the demon gets out and possesses him, apparently.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Oh, another high point, I guess. Russell Crowe spends the first half of this movie kind of making cuckoo noises for no real, the apparent reason. He does it at least 3 times.
Yeah, and apparently it's well received, but it sounds so stupid to me that I was like, yeah.
Yeah, everyone kept laughing every time he did it. It's like, what's the joke here?
I guess it's that he's insane.
Are we? Yeah.
Why did all these hot nuns enjoy that so much?
Well, you know, at a certain point, if you're hot enough, your jokes become funny no matter what, you know?
But Russell Crowe's not...
Yes, he is, bro. Rahul. Shut your fucking mouth.
Oh, I see. I get it.
He is a whole lot of man.
I will say, he wears his weight a lot better than most people who have that kind of weight. He's still got a lot of, like, stocky, strong-seemingness, and he's still got that Russell Crowe charisma.
Well, he's a fucking gladiator. Yep. I mean, of course. Also, he was a captain.
And also a very...
And a commander. Yep.
And a racist skinhead in the movie Romper Stomper that most people don't remember exists.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Nope.
Never. Pretty good.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. Anyways, anyone else got a high point, low point, whatever the fuck?
I think there's not that many low points in this movie. Because the low points were just, like, the boring parts.
Whenever something happens in this movie, it's pretty entertaining. It's just there's maybe a few too many stretches where not much happens.
Or it's like the low points are actually the high points because, like, anything happening is better than being boring.
Yeah. Oh, I do. I actually have a very serious low point. So there's a teenage daughter in this, and she spends most of her time like bearing her midriff, and then eventually gets possessed by the devil and climbs around on the wall in short shorts in a way that I'm pretty sure was designed to show off her CGI butt. But anyways, she looks a lot like Sophie Thatcher, and they should have just cast Sophie Thatcher. Why is there not Sophie Thatcher in this movie? There's a tailor-made role for
what
her.
What a serious low point. Man, this movie is bullshit. I can't even
this
believe
like,
it.
This bit role in a pretty mid-movie. Why do they not get Lawrence's favorite actress?
I mean, I'm not sure that this is any bigger of a role than the Boogeyman, really.
Yeah, I guess not.
Or the Book of Boba Fett, man. She has like 2 scenes in that, which are the best scenes in all of Star Wars.
I personally don't really understand why you're so obsessed with her, but you know.
Obsessed
I don't understand,
makes it sound
I don't understand
so
most of your motivations.
Oh, it's creepy.
Look, I just think she's very pretty, and I like looking at her, and I like watching her do things.
Explain the shrine.
What shrine?
about the shrine here.
Yeah, look. It's a shrine implies a religion. This is entirely secular.
Huh.
Okay, I have a low point.
Okay.
When they sort of let the... I mean, I know... It makes sense in the story, but it feels, I just don't like it that in the story.
You don't
like
it, mate.
Right. Don't like it, mate.
In the story, they're like, yeah, the reason for the Spanish Inquisition was that a demon took over a dude and started influencing the church. So really it wasn't the church, it was the demons. I don't know, it just felt like a way of like ducking responsibility for
this movie was Christian propaganda, dude.
Yeah, although it's jokey Christian propaganda that probably doesn't actually believe in any of that shit.
Well, yeah. But
still, yeah, it does say that, although I would still argue that it's kind of the Catholic Church's fault, because, like, if you're the Catholic Church and you let yourself get infiltrated by demons, that probably means you're fucking up as a church, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. That seems like it's job number one.
And, considering the strength of these demons, it doesn't seem like a pretty, very hard job either.
They should just touch the coin to everybody, and, yeah. You know, if you explode, ooh, they're like, yeah.
And it's also like, all right, the demon gave us these horrible ideas to, like, torture people. Why did we just be like, okay?
The demon said kill the Jews, so we killed the Jews. But, I mean, real talk, we kind of wanted to do that anyways.
Look, the demon has a lot of bad ideas. But...
Look, the demon gave us the push, but we were standing on the edge, you know?
The only reason I eat all the bread at a restaurant is because of the demons. It's not because of me.
That's the second most evil thing the demon did after starting the Spanish Inquisition. Making Rahul eat carbs.
God damn it. The fucking demons infiltrating my pathetically weak mind.
The waiter brings Rahul a second basket of bread, so he just pushes a fucking coin to her
forehead
to see if she explodes or not.
Oh god, the honey butter, fucking demons!
But then after you explode her, you do still eat the bread.
Oh, yeah. I can't stop.
Well, okay, he does dust the brains off first.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's not a savage.
Yeah.
Brain tastes like butter, right? It go well on bread.
Now, we have actually talked about this a little bit. One, you should not eat human brain because you will get kuru. But two, it is insanely high in cholesterol, as you'll remember. So.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, demon possession, so...
Yeah. The demon gave me kuru, the Lawrence Allen story.
Oh, man, you can start a cult based off that.
I'm getting kuru.
Yeah, really cool demon cult. Yeah.
I respect that.
Yeah. Anyways, anyone else got a parting shot?
I don't think so. I don't think I have anything left to say on this one.
Yeah. I mean, there's like funny things we haven't touched on, but I want to leave something on the table for the listener, you know, if they do decide to seek this out.
They want to watch the movie. They want to hear every point of every plot point.
Yeah. Or just every like insane thing that happens. Although again, Raul, so you said you thought the ending like was just nothing. And I do think that them ripping off the ending of a Marvel movie where the character gets invited to join S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and in the end, he was like, the fucking Pope was like, I've replaced him with someone who is more trustworthy. I was like, didn't you appoint...
What? Yeah, you appointed him in the first place.
What?
Yeah.
I think that there is, like, actual, like, weird politics that happens with promotions in the Catholic Church, and it isn't just the Pope saying something happens.
Okay.
But it does seem like if the Pope doesn't want you to have a position, they could probably stop that.
Yeah, I mean, I think bishops are regional, right?
Yeah. I guess this guy's like a bishop attached to Rome, though. I don't know enough about Catholicism to even really speculate on this.
Yeah, I don't know either. My knowledge stems from Angels and Demons?
Oh, I thought you were going to say from the young Pope, and you mostly know that the Pope fucks.
Huh.
I assume that he fucks in that show. It's got a pretty healthy Mr. Skin rating, and I don't see how else it would have ended up there.
I've not seen it.
It's where Jude Law becomes a pope. But he's like young, you know.
Jude Law's
pope. He's a youngish pope.
I feel like Jude Law can only do psychopathic characters. Is he a total psychopath in this?
No, I think he's pretty normal. You got to go get the door.
I kind of don't want to.
Who is it?
I'm just gonna ignore it.
Okay.
Wait, bring the microphone with you and answer it.
Interview the person.
Yeah, ask them if they've seen the Pope's Exorcist.
And if they have any humorous observations about it, and tell them we already covered the Pope vomiting.
Deal.
You guys want to move on to the game?
Yeah, unless Rahul actually is going to answer his door.
Oh, let me go look real quick.
You know, it is pretty weird. I imagine in the old days people liked their doorbells ringing, but now it is a source of only terror.
Yeah, not necessarily terror, but it's, well, that's part of it, but it's like mostly just sales.
Yeah, and it's never like sales of anything you would want either. It's just like the saddest people you can imagine going door to door desperately hustling for commission while you just buy the things you want online.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I get a lot of like exterminators. I'm in a different part of the country. That probably isn't, I don't really think I ever got those in Albuquerque, but.
Yeah, I got an alarm guy who I think had just determined that the house had recently changed hands. Then I got a guy trying to sell us essentially a knockoff Ring camera. And that guy, he talked to me for so, like he handed me a pamphlet and then we talked for a while and I kept explaining to him how we couldn't have any observation stuff in the house because it tends to pull Bianca's paranoia. And eventually he took the pamphlet back. And then I did actually buy my solar panels off a door-to-door saleswoman.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. You so got I guess it only has to work list. Once.
You got marked on some list that like, oh yeah, he'll buy stuff.
Yeah.
That's a very cynical way of thinking about it.
I'm pretty pleased with the solar system for what it's worth.
Nice.
Yeah.
Where do you have yours?
They're just on my roof.
All right.
Did you have to get like contractors to install it or?
Yeah, they like worked the whole deal for me. The interconnect, the whole thing, you know.
Nice.
I just paid them. And there was also a pretty healthy tax rebate, although I didn't take advantage of it because I figured that should go to, you know, people who needed it. And I didn't really. Anyways. Huh. Well, sort of like how on the kidney thing, I could have gotten most of those expenses reimbursed, but I just didn't because the charities have kind of a limited amount of money and I didn't want to, you know.
Yeah, well, the tax rebate, probably not as much of an issue.
They said that at least that there was a limited number of slots per year, so we needed to file early. And I'm just like, eh. Anyways, this is weird. What was it, Rahul?
Oh, it was a demon.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I coined him, so it's done.
Well, you are going to have to... You should go get a hose. You don't want that shit to, like, set into the concrete or you'll never get it out. Anyways, let's do a game. So we're just doing another round of YouTube roulette. I haven't quite gotten to... Like, I listened to a 40K novel, but it didn't have many hilarious, like, names in it. So... Yeah. So, Rahul, you want to start us off?
All right. We're doing three, right? Top three?
Yep.
All right. Number one is the latest Always Sunny podcast, because apparently I watched a clip from one, like, two weeks ago. The Dennis System with a special guest, Jill Latiano Howerton. Yeah.
Dennis's wife.
Yeah.
Glenn's wife.
I guess so.
She's also in the Dennis System episode. So that makes
sense. The system works, man.
Number two is Alex Hormozzi's advice on branding in 2023.
What?
Very good. And number three is I tried injectable pre-workout.
Okay.
Wow. Injectable? That sounds horrible.
Yeah, it sounds awful.
Why would you do that?
Now I gotta watch that shit.
I'm kind of curious because it sounds so terrible that it's like, how would this work?
So, guys...
Why do you think it's that terrible, though? I'm curious.
Because it's a fucking needle.
Okay, but...
Well, it,
like,
go
to the needle part.
I've got to assume... Okay, well, actually, I don't got to assume. Dude, anything going into your vein, that's crazy to me. And if it's not going into your vein, it's just intramuscular, and it's like, what the fuck's going in there?
So, yeah. So it's not about making you feel horrible. It's more about how crazy it is.
Okay. I think it's a horrible idea. Oh, not like sure it's horrible. Not like whatever's in the needle is horrible.
I mean, I think whatever's in the needle probably isn't actually that good for you
meth
either.
Meth as a pre-workout could just be like scaling. An amazing pre-workout for the workout, but not in any other sense.
Meth would be an amazing pre-workout?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
if you could be focused enough on the workout post meth, I guess.
It'd be great if your workout was
like a horrible idea too.
I mean, it would be great if your workout was like taking apart an appliance or something. I don't know if it would actually help you run or whatever.
What?
No, it would. It gives you crazy energy. Yeah.
Man, you guys should know a lot about meth.
Pre-workout is like caffeine and some other
stuff.
Like,
wait, you do like... fucking caffeine before you... Are you insane?
No, I'm telling you... Dude, you listen. I'm telling
I don't think Rahul does pre-workout.
But, like, I can't imagine... Like, I guess maybe it's because you guys are doing, like, lifting or something, and I'm, like, a long-distance runner, but I cannot imagine doing caffeine before one of those. All the pissing and the dehydration and the increased heart rate.
A pre-workout would be terrible for like a half marathon.
Or like running any lifting. Distance at all, I think.
What?
Maybe a couple miles would be okay, yeah.
Mm. But anything where hydration starts entering into it. Yes. Or, yeah.
Right.
Agreed. I mean, I don't know what professionals do, right? They might take a ton of stimulants and be fine. Right? They might have some strategy.
I doubt it. Not long distance runners. I doubt it.
I think like all of long distance running, essentially, once you get past about the 20 mile mark, it is just about like managing your body's stores of glycerin and shit or whatever. That one. And that's what the whole like carbo loading. And then like at a certain point you built your body up so that you can just run like forever, essentially. Like in terms of your muscles can handle it. And after that, it is entirely this weird science experiment of like exactly what nutrients you can take with you that'll continue to fuel your body so you won't collapse. And that's all ultra marathoning is.
So what about 20 miles in, you and just inject some glycogen straight into your tum-tum? Just a big old needle.
You don't need to inject it into your stomach.
Your mouth fucking works. Just swallow it. It's like the thing that you ingest quickest.
Let's say you start feeling a little dehydrated, so you got your bottle of water in a syringe.
Just put it up your ass.
This is what? Where did that come from?
Well, that's the fastest way to absorb it.
But the key is you can't break stride because you're trying to hit a time goal. So you got to somehow get the funnel up there, the water in, while continuing to run.
Maybe you could just have it installed prior, you know, just run with it.
There you go.
Why do you have a tail? Don't worry about it. Sometimes stuff goes in, sometimes stuff goes out. Don't worry about it.
I think that, like, trying to inject like a saline solution into your veins while you're running seems like a really bad idea. I don't know, Rahul. That's just though.
Do you think that?
Yeah, I mean, this is my uneducated guess. And I'm sorry. I think that otherwise it's a great idea. Though.
Now I have a question for you guys about injectables.
Okay.
When I first started drinking, my main problem was that I was getting dirt cheap vodka and it tasted horrible. So, and even with mixers, it was, you know, it was this stuff called Popov. It's like a potato vodka. And I think it's borderline undrinkable. Mm-hmm. So I told a friend this once, a guy from high school, you guys know him, the, you know, druggiest of all our friends.
Yeah. Right?
And he told me this insane story where like, to get around the drinking, they used to inject the booze through their belly buttons so that they could get the alcohol in their system quicker. That can't possibly be true, right?
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't sound...
It sounds wrong, yeah.
It doesn't sound legit, but, you know, people do some pretty awful things.
People do messed up stuff, but it's also like, if it's just going into your stomach, you can just drink it.
But also, like, if you fuck that up even a little bit, you've just injected a bunch of, like, 80-proof booze into here, and that shit burns so bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe a needle's thin enough that it wouldn't cause damage, but it just seems like perforating your stomach lining is a very bad idea.
How do you even know, like, are you even in the state of mind to, like, hit your stomach? Like, that's...
I don't know, man.
And also, I think if you're drunk enough that you're willing to do that, you're probably drunk enough to handle the taste of the booze.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, I vote it's well, bullshit. You're name, man. That's yeah.
My... Oh, well, anyways, it's my turn.
Okay.
So, I've got Penda's Fen 1974, which is a British folk horror movie. And I'm actually pretty happy that that turned up because it's like by far the least embarrassing thing that could have popped up.
All right.
Then I've got
two more.
Yeah, then I've got the top 10 most powerful characters in Warhammer 40K, and it's got a picture of the Emperor, the Avatar of Kane, and I think the Laughing God, although I'm not sure. And then I've got Classical Music for Villains Out There, which has a picture, Epic Music by A Vampire's Playlist, which has a picture of like a classic like drawing of a Harlequin, but they put the Joker's face on it, and I
don't know what the fuck that is. I think I came out. It's an hour long, so I'm not gonna. But I came out okay here. And then, as a bonus, my next one is a come down bit called "Pissing the Bed."
It seems like their thing is.
Share that one in the Discord later.
Yep.
Nice. Anyway,
Ronald, what do you get?
Okay, let me take a look here. Okay, the first one I got is "The Power of Horse Stance." 5 minutes a week can change how you move.
Hell yeah.
That's a Bioneer video. Pretty good shit.
Icon of a guy doing horse stance.
Yeah, it's Bioneer, right?
It is. Yep. Rahul's actually just seen it. Okay, then the next one I got is "Ninja Master Rates 8 Ninjutsu Fights in Movies and TV." How real is it, Insider?
But, I mean, ninjutsu isn't real. It's kind of the twist there.
What? Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's... Okay, the modern schools of ninjutsu do not actually descend from ancient ninjutsu, and, like, all martial arts are kind of bullshit. Except for Krav Maga and MMA.
No, ninjutsu's real, bro. I think the only martial arts that are bullshit are really, like, the like wushu ones that are like all these like crazy stylized Chinese martial arts.
What about Tai Chi? You can try to tell me Tai Chi's real?
I don't even think that's a martial art.
Fighting? I thought it was just for like working
that's
out.
That's just like balance and shit.
Which, you know, I should do some Tai Chi.
I mean, I think there's like maybe fighting games where people do Tai Chi, but I don't think that that's like, you should take that as canon. Okay, anyways, I'm going to go on to my next video. Okay, next one. Fallout 4, 5 most evil things you can do and may have missed in the wasteland.
Ronald's already done all
I kind of want to watch that one.
You don't even need to watch that one.
Yeah, I've probably already done most of those. I'm pretty evil when I play those games.
Yeah, not just when you play games, my friend.
It's a reflection, it's a dark reflection of how I am in real life.
What you didn't know is that Ronald was the demon who kept ordering the bread in my story.
Yeah. And then I got exploded by a coin or whatever.
R.I.P. Ronald.
Yeah. And then as a bonus, I got McNulty tells Brianna Barksdale the truth about D'Angelo, The Wire. Worst mother in history.
That sounds serious.
Well, so
from The Wire.
So who do we think had the most embarrassing one?
None of them are embarrassing, I don't think.
I had the one about ninjutsu.
Yeah, but ninjutsu's cool.
Yeah, I find it pretty cool. Well, you know what? Lawrence had a weird niche horror movie from the 70s. That's pretty bad.
Pandas Fed is a good movie, I think. I haven't actually watched it.
What's the first comment on that video?
Oh, you know, I'm hovering over it, and the reason I got served it is because it's from my Watch Later playlist.
Oh, that's even more embarrassing.
The first comment is, this is the kind of thing and its intellectual and spiritually subversive ambition that seems so rare. Pendus Fend isn't about pleasing crowds or making coherent sense or even technical accomplishment, as it is earnest in its efforts to creatively unsettle from right in the middle of things.
Speaking more
personally, although I grew up in rural Canada and not in a prep school, I found myself identifying with the main character in all kinds of ways. The earnestness about being conservative in one's youth, in part to protect oneself from the threatening mysteries that allure as much as they loom from beyond, within, and below.
Wow.
He did
edit
interesting
it. Interesting I've ever heard.
That was... Yeah.
Did you write that before you even watched the movie?
Nope, I didn't grow up in Canada.
Are you sure?
Well, the rest of it's also lies. So.
I like the idea of Ronald reading a comment that's like, I like this video, and he's like, you fucking liar.
I know you don't like it.
Nobody would ever say that.
Anyways,
I think Lawrence is the biggest nerd. Concluded.
Nerd.
But I'm the only one of us we know for sure has had sex.
No.
Yeah, I think the fact that you keep bringing that up just reinforces my point, to be honest.
How does it... fact you keep arguing against my point just makes my point stronger, I feel. Nope, I'm not going to explain how. And in fact, you asking me to explain how, you guessed it.
Also reinforces my point.
Because only a nerd would continuously harp on having sex once.
A cool. You know, it actually took us
holy shit.
You know,
Lawrence is stunned.
Yeah. This has been a bad day for Lawrence getting owned. I'm going to have to go run on extra lot tomorrow to own Ronald. Ronald gets owned whenever I run more than 6 miles. That's the rule.
That is the rule.
That's the rule.
As we all know, it's been written in
the stars.
Yeah. And sacramented by the Pope.
Yeah. And the Pope's exorcist.
Yep.
Anyways, let's go to recommendations and cautions. Fuck it.
All right.
Rahul, do you have something?
Yeah, this is a weird one, but I'm going
to
do it.
As opposed to your other normal ones.
So I watched something called Rick Steves' Best of the Alps, which is like one of those like annoying videos you see on Prime that it's just like packed with them, like travel videos where it's like some dude just like walking around Europe, you know, and he's like, oh, this mountain.
It's like a white British guy who's like, oh, I'm so excited to see this mountain. That's, you know, in the Swiss Alps.
Pretty much. I think he's American, but yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much nailed it. But there's this fucking trail he did, which is like up in the Alps, and it's like you do 10 miles a day, and there's just like, you know, villages and shops and stuff the whole way. It's just like a hike you do for like 7 days, like 10 miles a day. You just hike between hotels. It sounds freaking awesome.
You want to do it?
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
That sounds pretty cool.
It sounds super sweet. I actually, I'm
it's
not
like the best parts of hiking without having to sleep or to camp.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And you just like, you got to try different foods and you just, you know, just stuff the whole way. And it's like a whole thing. I'm not in shape to walk 10 miles a day though, honestly, but I'm probably getting there.
You should look into that. Cause like a lot of countries have these things called walking tours that are basically just what you're talking about. Although not on the
Alps. Is
that
what that is? Oh
yeah.
I didn't know. That was a thing already.
They're very popular in Britain.
Huh. Well, shit.
Yeah. Oh, I have a follow-up real quick.
Yeah.
So this is by George Sawyer, whose bio is, I teach Qigong for healing burnout. And it's in answer to the question, can you actually use Tai Chi to fight? And he says, most people, you push on them, they fall over. You push on a Tai Chi master, you fall over. I haven't met many who put in the very, very substantial amount of time to be good at it, decades, but those few I've seen face-to-face can be truly scary. So this guy's going around seeing people doing Tai Chi at this park and going, oh my God!
I mean, honestly, if you put in decades of work into an exercise, you're probably going to be like in good enough shape and control enough over your body that you'll be able to fight someone. Maybe not an MMA fighter, but...
But I just like the idea of him being just, I bet that guy's super good at Tai Chi.
Yeah. He does like a Warrior One yoga pose and...
The guy fucking runs away screaming. Anyways, Rahul, do you have a caution?
No cautions this time.
Okay, Ronald?
Yeah, sure. Okay, I've got a recommendation and a caution. The recommendation this week is The Bear Season 2. I don't know if I've already recommended The Bear on this podcast, but season 2 just came out, or recently, and maybe not just recently came out, and it's a really good show. Basically, the premise is this guy in season 1, the guy moves back to his hometown where his brother has committed suicide, and he takes over the business that his brother was running, which is like a local Italian beef place, and the brother who came back, not the one who died, is like a world-renowned chef. And so he's like taking over this small little like local dive restaurant and kind of figuring out what it means to run a restaurant in his hometown and kind of reconciling the relationships from his past when he's been gone for a long time and kind of getting over the trauma of what he's been in and this like horrible restaurant that he was working at where like the work environment was really terrible. So season 1 is excellent and season 2 just came out and it's also really good. I mean, it just kind of continues the story. So definitely highly recommend The Bear. And if I already recommended The Bear, then I recommend season two. And then my caution, this is actually a light caution. So I saw this movie in theaters and I actually liked it quite a bit more than I thought I would. This is The Flash from 2023, starring Ezra Miller. Now I caution against this movie because it's starring Ezra Miller, who's, I think, like, pretty fucked up dude. And it's kind of shocking why the DC Cinematic Universe has him as, like, a lead man.
Still. Yeah, they've, like, kidnapped, like, or been accused of kidnapping multiple people and trying to start a cult. It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily try to support this movie. I watched this in theaters. There was basically nobody there. And I was in, I think, I watched it with a friend. So there's the two of us and then one other person. And this was in, like, an XD theater. So there were a lot of seats and just no one was watching it. So I don't feel too bad. I think this movie completely bombed anyways. I only really went to see it because I was hanging out with a friend and we wanted to go see a movie and that was what was showing. This movie was actually pretty funny. I had a pretty good time with it. It's probably one of the best DC movies that has come out. And I think it's kind of funny that this is the one that bombed. I guess nobody wanted to see Ezra Miller.
And also, I think people are just fucking tired of, like, superheroes and especially the DC shit at this point.
Yep, I agree. I think people, I mean, honestly, I'm tired of superhero movies too. I think that they've gotten really boring. And I think that this one in particular was actually pretty interesting compared to most superhero movies. Like, the premise of the movie, the humor of the movie was good. And they actually kind of investigate, like, some of the darker aspects of the character of the Flash. So overall, I thought this movie was, like, pretty okay. It still looked ugly as hell. I don't know how this movie had such a huge budget and looked so terrible, but I had an okay time with it. If you, like, catch this one on TV, I wouldn't necessarily turn the channel, but I wouldn't go to the theater for it, and I wouldn't support Ezra Miller. I personally wouldn't do it again. And that's it for me.
Oh, yeah. So, one thing on The Bear. So, if you're a Community fan, Joel McHale is in it, and he's got, like, this amazing... He's not in it very much, but the scenes he's in are incredible, where he's just, like, leaning over this guy and just, like, whispering in his ear how he's a fuck-up and no one will ever love him over and over and over, while the guy appears to be doing a pretty good job of being a chef. Yeah, anyways.
Yep, that is pretty good. Actually, there's a lot of cameos in The Bear and in Season 2. There's especially one episode where there's just, like, an incredible amount of cameos. I don't even want to really spoil it, but, like, if you're into that kind of thing, definitely check it out.
Yeah. Anyways, so for my recommendation, it's a Warhammer book called Cadian and Blood by Aaron Dembski Bowden. I came into this where I had just finished Bone White, which was a pretty subtle horror novel where, I mean, it was pretty atmospheric, but also not a lot happened. And I think it had, like, a body count of maybe 4 people, which, you know, low for a horror novel. And then it's like the subtle atmospheric thing. And then I get into Cadian Blood, and in the first, like, 10 pages, 7 billion people die and come back as zombies. And I'm like, oh God, I love you so much, Warhammer 40K. And the premise is that this world, for no reason that anyone can figure out, has been infected by a zombie plague and everyone has died. But because it's a cathedral world, the Imperium in its infinite wisdom has decided to send its troops in to reclaim the world from, like, zombies and some plague marines and shit. But also they're doing that thing from Aliens where they're like, we don't want you to damage any of the cathedrals, so you're not allowed to use your good weapons. So everything's going horrible. But, you know, the Cadian soldiers, wouldn't you know it, they're tougher than anyone expects, and they get involved with an Inquisitor and have to uncover what's going on at the planet and save the day. It's pretty standard, which is kind of weird because Aaron Dembski Bowden, his other novels are, like, either chaos, like, centered Horus Heresy stuff that's, like, really weird, or Hell's Reach, which is as close as Warhammer has ever come to having an Unforgiven, where it's, like, a Space Marine novel that does everything you expect from a Space Marine novel while also kind of commenting on it and, like, being grim and cynical about it and, like, the futility of it all. And this is him just writing a pretty normal Imperial Guard novel, but it's still really well written. The action scenes are excellent. The characterizations are, like, as good as they need to be and done very quickly so you can get to the good shit. And it's just very fun to have, like, zombies in 40K. Like, of course there are zombies in 40K, but it's cool to have a zombie novel. And then for my caution, this is a movie I was complaining about in the group chat. It's called Swallowed, and it's from 2023. And it starts incredibly, where there are these two guys and they need some money. So they go to this drug dealer, and the drug dealer's like, okay, swallow. You're going to swallow these things. You're going to get across the Mexican border, and then you're going to poop them out, and we'll pay you, or not the Canadian border, and then we'll pay you money. And then they try to back out, and she pulls a gun and makes them both swallow. And then they discover that the things they swallowed aren't drugs, but are alive. And it's up until like the first half is over, it's just like building tension and like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Oh my God, what did they eat? And then it just settles on the most boring explanations for all that shit, and kind of just turns into a very fairly prosaic like thriller where one guy's trapped in a house with another guy with a gun and is trying to like use psychology to escape. And the second half, it doesn't actually end up mattering almost at all that they swallowed things that were alive. And the second half isn't like bad. It's just not what I wanted at all from that premise. And it's like, you had a premise that good. Why would you walk away from it like that, man? So
yeah, because that is an incredible premise.
Oh my God. And the first half where it looks like they're going to follow through on it and go into like horrible body horror. It's just like, oh my, like, can you imagine what David Cronenberg would have done with that shit? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even, but it would be horrible.
Oh yeah. That's the point of David Cronenberg, is he can imagine shit you can't. And then he shows it to you and you're horrified.
And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. But they're doing surgery for fun and the guy just keeps growing new organs. What the fuck? Anyways. So yeah, I wouldn't watch Swallowed 2023. Although it does have, you guys ever see Nightmare on Elm Street 2?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know how the main character in that is like, he's like coded as gay, but the movie's also like super homophobic. And it ended up like basically destroying that actor's career because like everyone's like, hey, that guy kind of reads as gay, and it was the 1980s and everyone was super homophobic, and the guy actually was gay, which only made it worse. So he ended up just never working in Hollywood after that, I think.
Damn.
Yeah, but he's actually like one of the actors in this, and I think it's his first acting role since like Nightmare on Elm Street or like thereabouts. Wow. And he actually does a pretty good job of like being sort of an affable gay guy who keeps talking about Barbara Streisand while also like being incredibly menacing.
Huh. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I've never like seen that kind of like that kind of gay guy be played for menace before, and it was like really something. Anyways, Rahul, do you have a plug?
Sure do.
Hell yeah.
All right, I'd like to plug the Czech chemist from the University of Prague. Back in the day, the 1850s, named Bohuslav Browner.
Hell yeah.
He posited that there was an unknown element with properties indeterminate between those of the known elements neodymium and samarium based on the atomic numbers. Well, it was later discovered, and he named it after reading a Warhammer book. He named it Promethium. So I want to plug him for ripping off Warhammer and shoving that shit into the periodic table. Pretty messed up, but I respect it.
Gotta respect it.
Yeah.
Gotta respect the play.
Incredible.
Huh. Silence from Lawrence.
Yeah.
Shocking. I thought he'd have a lot to say on this.
Did we lose him?
We might have lost Lawrence here.
Oh my God. Well, Ronald, do you have a plug?
I don't have a plug. I didn't prepare one because I never have a plug. Okay. Well, from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you. We're going to call it there. Night, folks.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather